launched by the AETC and is a fantastic tool for ensuring your patients have the best standard of care. I encourage you to check it out. And remember, health is a human right.
Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel. We're broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. My co-host Rachel is not here with us today. She'll hopefully be back next time. But both Rachel and I are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on the Zoom, we have Brita Holmes and Adam McCormick. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thrilled to be here.
Excited to hear about what's going on. So, but before we get into that, we always like to start with just getting to know who you are a little bit. So can you start by telling us a little bit about your teaching background and experience?
Yeah, okay, I'll start. So I actually have a little bit of a different, I guess you could say, path to teaching. I came into teaching when I was a little bit older than most of my colleagues were when they started. I always wanted to be a teacher. I went to school for teaching, but my parents had a business and I ended up working in the business for a long time and then ended up in the health insurance industry for several years. So I always felt the calling to go back to teaching, and I did. And now I have been teaching sixth grade English for the past couple years at West Granton Intermediate School. Before that, I was a daily sub within the district, and I was a long-term sub as well. So I'm lucky for that because I got to go around and see the different schools and get to know different people within the schools. So that was a great opportunity. But yeah, that's pretty much my journey.
I'm similar as far as the subbing goes. I come from a family of teachers. My grandfather was a principal in a local school district. Then both my parents were teachers as well. My sister is an elementary school teacher. One of my brothers has taught at the collegiate level. And then I currently coach and teach with one of my other brothers at the high school that I currently work at. I started subbing in 2006. Was hired in a different district years later, and then I came back to Scranton to teach in the city that I live. And then since then, I've been teaching. I've taught several different things. I've taught math, science, and now I currently teach English to 9th and 10th graders.
Great. And when you say it was a great opportunity to substitute, I think, wow. That substituting is hard work. You don't typically get the best behavior from students. So my
I always say I was lucky to be older when by older, it's, you know, my 30s, but I was older so I can kind of take some of the behaviors and the insults a little bit more in stride than I would have, I think, if I were 22. So, yeah.
And it reminded me, I always said that if I could deal with this, then it's certainly what I want to be doing. So mm-hmm. I knew it then.
Yeah. You sort of touched on this a little bit, Adam, as far as your, you know, sort of this running in your family, but can you each tell us what inspired you to become a teacher and what do you enjoy about it now that you are teaching?
Yeah, I went to college actually for architectural engineering because I was convinced that I didn't want to be my parents, you know, rebellious 18-year-old that I was. But then I was coming home in the summer and I was tutoring younger cousins and neighbors and things like that in different areas, and just realized that it was what I wanted to be doing. It was what I'm supposed to be doing, in my opinion. So then I went back to school to get my certificate. My teaching certificate added a couple other areas as well. And then now it's where I want to be. I just love going in. The last 18 months was tough, obviously, with the pandemic for many reasons, but I think teachers thrive on that relationship that they have with their students, and that's what always has driven me. So that those relationships and the opportunities that I can help kids to recognize and realize is really what keeps me in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I always say Mrs. Nestrick, right? So 11th grade, I had Mrs. Nestrick for English class. I loved English, always loved my English teachers. I was sort of the nerd in elementary school who loved diagramming sentences. My parents had a little gift shop, and I set up a classroom in the basement of the gift shop when I was a little girl, and always sort of taught my dolls and things like that. So there was never really a question as to what my dream was. But it, you know, I have to say Mrs. Nestrick, 11th grade, saw something in me that I don't think I saw in myself. And at that time, you know, and it happens with a ton of my students, and I'm sure Adam could say the same thing. I might not have been going down the right road. There were things that were going on in my own family, and Mrs. Nestrick saw me. And I remember, you know, reading the Scarlet Letter and, you know, having this moment where I realized, wow, like, you can really put your life into any sort of book that you're reading and see how things could be reflected. And I wanted so badly to share that. So I carried that with me for so long. And I was super lucky that when I was a long-term sub at Scranton High School, I would sit and have my morning coffee with Mrs. Nestrick. So sort of came full circle. We text every day. She's one of my dearest friends. And I jokingly thank her now, you know, I'm like, thanks. Yeah. But yeah, it was a teacher.
Yeah. I think
that one, right?
Great. And then last question about just your background is, do either of you have union roles or official positions in your union?
Yeah, I'm a member of the executive board of the Scranton Federation of Teachers, and then Breed and I both serve on a planning committee, I guess would be the best way to describe it, which encompasses a lot of different facets of whether it be community events that we are trying to plan or outreach. And now obviously there's a lot more planning over the last week or so.
Yeah, great. Well, let's get to that then. So so you're both teachers in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and I wanted to have you on because you have been on strike since yesterday. Can you start by telling us, though, briefly about Scranton? I mean, we have listeners from all over. And also, what sort of problems your students typically struggle with?
So when it comes to the background of Scranton, it is a union town. I mean, we were the largest, I think, coal mining community when it came to anthracite coal, you know, back at the turn of the 20th century. And I mean, Adam probably knows maybe a little bit more about that because he's certified in 100 different things. But I always say, you know, my parents came here. My parents immigrated from Ireland, and they lived in New York City. And when I was little, they came to Scranton because they wanted us to sort of have an experience where we had a backyard and we weren't sort of in the city. And it's just a hardworking, blue collar, community driven city that's really been built on the backs of unions. Now, the past, I would say, decade, we've experienced a ton of diversity, which is really cool because, you know, there was a ton of diversity way before we were around, when the mines ran tons of immigrants. Every area in Scranton sort of has a nickname based on the immigrant community that was there. And then once the mines and the railroads started to decline, I think so did any sort of drive to come into the city. So it's been really cool to see that drive coming back. So our students are incredibly diverse. I mean, the other day or last week, I was just asking my kids where they're from, and Nepal, Afghanistan, you know, just I can't even think off the top of my head where some, I mean, obviously a ton of them are from Mexico, El Salvador. I can't even begin to touch the surface of that. So that's sort of where Scranton is.
Great. Okay. Now, let's get into things here. So my understanding is you have been working without a contract for 4 years or maybe even longer. Is that accurate? Can tell us about that and tell us what you've been doing as far as bargaining or not bargaining. It's hard for me to imagine 4 years of bargaining.
Yeah, well, that is accurate. We're now in our fifth year without a contract. So we've been frozen in place where we were 5 years ago, which as it works out in many districts in our area, we have a large bump step. I don't know if that's familiar to other areas, but after 16 years of work, or in your 16th year of working in the district, you get your most significant raise. So there are big people that have been frozen on that for 5 years. So those are the people that are bearing the most significant burden of this 4+ years. But there have been negotiations, including tonight, I believe there's a negotiation session that was called. So hopefully there continues to be some movement in the right direction, but we've had fact finders that have come in and that we've unanimously approved the recommendation of the fact finder. That was in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. It was rejected by the district. That was an independent fact finder. We've gone to the bargaining table several times. They just really do not seem to be moving in any direction that protects the working conditions of our educators. And as you know, those working conditions that we teach in are the conditions that our students learn in, and that's really what we're trying to protect.
Okay. So talk a little bit more about what those things are. You were mentioning compensation, and then you've said something about working conditions. And also, why are those things so important to you that you're willing to strike for those things rather than settle for less?
Well, I'll take a couple of the first ones, and then I'll pass it to Brita as far as the health insurance aspect goes. I think she'd be a little bit better to speak to that. But some of the main sticking points we have right now are they'd like us to teach an additional class. They would like us to cover. We have trouble getting subs, substitute teachers. So they would like us to cover on our prep duties with no compensation for that time. And those two things obviously extend our workday. I don't think there's any educational leadership in the building that is explaining that to anybody down there. But every minute that I'm not planning for the next day is a minute that I have to plan for the next day at home. So those are two major sticking points. The financial side of it, although we obviously want the steps that we have worked for. That's one of the things they don't want to give us those steps. So we've been stuck on, we're in our fifth year now, so we should get five steps. They've offered us, I think at most in the contract, which would be a 7-year contract ultimately, I think they've offered us four. And in our understanding, we have worked that time and we expect to be recognized for those years that we have put within the district. So those are two of the major points that I would say. Compensation, we're really not looking for much change. We're just looking for it to stay relatively close to the status quo that we've had in the past, that we've had for years. We haven't changed our hourly rate as far as those extracurricular activities and things like that. We haven't changed that in, I don't know, 15 years, I don't think. So it's, we are not at, in our estimation, we are not asking for too much. But what the additional major sticking point I'm gonna let Brita talk to, and that is our health insurance.
Yeah, the health insurance that they're trying to sort of force down our throats is basically called ELAP, which isn't really health insurance. It's a third-party pricer. And basically what that is, if you go to the doctor and let's say the doctor charges you $1,000 for a service, right? Or for some sort of procedure, what ELAP will say, they'll be like, you know what? We think that you should get $100. And then the doctor is going to sort of go back and forth a little bit with that. And eventually the doctor is going to be like, no. And they're going to bill the member for the remaining amount. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking at, you know, members that are going to be getting, you know, bills for the balance of that. And then what they're trying to say is that, no, we'll negotiate with them. We're going to end up paying them eventually. But I worked in insurance for several years. I mean, this was what I did. So I've seen outfits like this before. The doctor will play a little bit with them. And then eventually they'll send a letter to the doctor on an attorney letterhead, which means nothing. It truly means nothing when you're in that world. And people's credit is gonna get destroyed. Mm-hmm. And the doctor is gonna say, listen, you've got a balance. I can't see you anymore until this is resolved. I've said that to the board. I've explained that. Multiple people have explained that. Nobody seems to want to listen to it. And there are not a whole lot of people who have experience with ELAP, but the ones that do have said it's been a really difficult negative experience for them. So there's that. It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there a final straw where people just said, okay, that's enough? Or were there some steps building up to, did you have a strike vote? Talk about how you got to that point.
Sure. So there certainly has been, it's kind of been like cutting down a tree, I guess, you know, where it's just every swing kind of puts you on less of a sure footing. As to where we'd end up. So if I'm not mistaken, we voted for, the entire membership voted for to authorize a strike over 18 months ago. I believe it was before the pandemic started in March of 2020. So we've had this on the table forever. Obviously, as educators, our primary focus is our students. So for the last 18 months, it's been very difficult to do that because there was already so much to struggle with. And obviously with some of the requirements we had to face as just people with social distancing and, you know, trying to quarantine and different things like that, we avoided that. But now back, we came back to school and the district saved money over that time. They were able to, because buildings were closed and all of a sudden some of those bills plummeted, they were able to save some of that money, but we returned and they still, in our opinion, do not seem to be willing to use that money in a way that would recruit and retain highly qualified teachers. So I think that was the major, where we just said enough is enough, like you said. We've seen historical corrections to members, to administrators in our central administration office, while we've also seen cuts to the opportunities that our kids get. So at some point we just had to kind of put your back up and lock in your footing and hold for what you know is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what they refer to as historical corrections. They always say that there's no money, but yet
yes, they
are able to provide these raises that they put under the guise of historical corrections to administration. They're able to create, new jobs in administration. I think one of the hugest issues where they closed our preschool program, which was sort of the crown jewel of Scranton. I think it was around for over 50, maybe almost 50 years, which the research all indicated was such a benefit to our students, such a necessary resource. They closed the local school in the middle of a pandemic when, the support for that school was huge, but would probably be greater if we weren't in the middle of a pandemic. And then, obviously they've got these numbers. Well, people aren't in school. So yeah, nobody's there. So nobody's going, the numbers are not accurate. And they just seem to be very good at twisting the numbers to fit the narrative that they want. One of the other things that's super concerning about the closing of the preschool program is it was federally funded. So that money wasn't coming from the district. It wasn't being used to pay for the teachers who were teaching the preschool program. And yet it's gone. And the money is still coming in, but where it is going hasn't been made very clear. Mm. So
yeah,
just a couple of shady things that need to be addressed.
Yeah. Well, you've been on strike for 2 days, so tell us what you have been doing these last couple of days.
Go ahead, Brady, you can take it.
Just walking a lot and eating pizza and donuts. No, I was laughing. I said it's day two and I already have blisters, so I'm in deep trouble. But I mean, think the camaraderie has been amazing and the community support. We've been, everybody is just, we're ready for this. We're ready to fight, and we're ready to fight for what's right. So we've been walking different shifts at different schools. We were all downtown today at the administration building. Just really getting out there and seeing each other and supporting each other and knowing that what we're doing is right. And that's really what we've been seeing so far. But again, it's only day two. So, we have a longer road ahead of us.
We had a rally outside of the central administration building today, and we're joined by the AFT president, Randy Weingarten, the AFT Pennsylvania president, Arthur Steinberg. There were a bunch of other unions that joined us. They actually, the Scranton police actually blocked the street off for us. There were so many people there. So that was really a great way to, it's early yet, emotions were certainly high, and I think you kind of saw there that everybody's ready to stand up for what we need as educators.
And you get the sense that the students and parents are supportive as well?
1,000%. Yeah, I mean, I think that's always something that's of concern when you're talking about, being on strike, because the students are always our main priority, always. So I was really worried that they would think that, this was something that I was doing against them, when really we're doing it for them. Yeah. But amazing support. I mean, there were kids that were jumping out of the car from my intermediate school with boxes of donuts in the middle of the rally. I mean, it really does. It moves you. Our band, which unfortunately is very small due to some of the issues with the district, came out, and what the band was playing for us while we were marching. I mean, it's just, it really does move you to tears.
And I said, when you're consistently under and devalued by a district when the community shows up like that. And obviously we know it's a tough time to go out. We're just back in school full bore this year, and to go back out just a few months in is certainly a concern when you are when the community is such an important aspect of the job you do. But they've been fantastic. I've, like Brita said, just donuts and pizza and coffee and hot chocolate as hand warmers. Like, people are just dropping off anything that they think we could need to make sure that we can continue to fight for the students of our district, essentially.
Great. Other unions too, other teacher unions, other unions, like in general, have just, I mean, today when I was walking, just a man on his lunch, he's a member of a union. I mean, he's like, I'm just wanted to come and walk with you guys on my lunch break. You know, it's just, it's really, it really does boost you up.
Great. Anything in particular that you would say you've learned from this experience so far that you'd want to share with our listeners? I mean, you sort of are sharing things that you're learning along the way, but anything else that you feel like that maybe that surprised you that you've learned from this so far?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I learned is just how valued we are. I think that it's something that we need to be reminded of. I know we are used to fighting for what we need and buying our own supplies and never having enough of whatever we need. But the people that matter, the members of the community, the kids that we serve, that has certainly kept me going. It's only been 2 days, but that's been the hardest part of being out of the classroom, is not having the kids around, and to see them not have to be at the schools and yet coming anyway to walk lines with the educators who are out on strike is just inspiring. And so that value, I think teachers don't often feel as much as they'd like to, but during this strike, it's unbelievable the boost that we've all gotten, in Brita's words.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I learned, and you know, it's probably a little bit sadder, is, you know, you realize that the people who are making decisions are often disconnected, but I don't think I even realized how incredibly disconnected our administration is from the front lines. They simply don't know what we do every day. They seem to be completely clueless as to the types of challenges that our kids go through and what our kids are doing and what they're experiencing and what we as teachers are experiencing. I think I'm constantly stunned by their lack of understanding, and their, it just seems like a willful ignorance, like they just don't want to. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's disheartening to me, but that's reversed very much by the community support.
Great. Well, we need to wrap it up, but can you just tell us quickly what's next? Is there any sort of plan for the weekend? I think, Adam, you mentioned that there might be some negotiating going on. And is there anything that listeners can do to support you all?
Yeah, we do. Like I said, there are negotiations going on currently, so hopefully that's going well. There is a plan next week. It's in the early stages, but to take a trip to our state capital, Harrisburg, where funding comes from, and try to make sure that those people who make the decisions are also doing what's best for the students and communities that they serve. And as far as what people can do to support you, I think we alluded to it earlier, the number of people that have come out to support other unions. And I think that that's something I've recognized, that I need to be a little bit more aware of my community, of the union laborers in my community, and make sure to support pro-union candidates, and just make sure that we continue. We're from a union town, and we need to make sure that not only do we survive, but we also extend that opportunity for unions to make the difference that we need them to make.
And I just want to mention, you know, one of the things, I just want to say this really quickly, is you know, sometimes you'll have people who have the best intentions and they'll say, well, why don't you just go to a neighboring district, right? Mm-hmm. I have a five-year-old and a seven-year-old and they're in the Scranton school district. So as much as I understand why so many teachers have felt that they had to leave to support their families, my concern is all the kids that are left behind. And we can't, it doesn't solve the problem. What's going to happen to my children, my own children, as well as my students, if there are no teachers to teach them? So that, I just wanted to throw that in.
Yes, all right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Adam, and thank you so much, Brita, for joining us on KBOO. I also want to thank our engineer. Thank you to our audience for tuning in. This is Stephen Siegel. Well, you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock Pacific Standard Time to catch another Labor Radio show.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM on your Portland dial, KBOO.FM on your everywhere on earth internet dial. Stay safe, stay sane, stay tuned. KBOO, the best in community radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? Anymore, all the men were men.